is time to put away the bias, the lies, and deceit and bring forth real talk from real people about real news. Providing the out loud truth and capturing the essence of a new generation all in a fast-paced hour. This is Viewpoint This Sunday.
Welcome to another Viewpoint This Sunday. This is Malcolm Out Loud. Well, there is one story that is on everybody's mind, folks, and that is, when are we going to open America back up for business? I mean, really, all stories and all paths lead to that main objective. But what's really interesting about it is the divide that we're seeing in the nation with governors and mayors and others, and of course, through Washington, where you have red states with one process of thinking, blue states with another. Listen, we have a big program today with a great, great group of folks here. Excited to bring this to you today. Let's get started here. And I'd like to bring on here Michael Johns. Michael is the national co-founder and leader of the Tea Party movement. He's a former White House speech writer and a policy analyst with the Heritage Foundation. And so, Michael, what I see, again, is the big story is people are restless. I mean, let's face it, it's been a tough couple of months for the country, for the world, but certainly for America here as well. And now you see these battle lines being drawn where the administration came out with guidelines to open up the states, recommendations, the states had to make the decisions, and now the controversies seem to be falling with, I think, a blue state and a red state mentality. Talk to us about that.
Well, the first thing it's important to recognize is that the opening of these states ultimately is almost exclusively a state, not a federal government responsibility. So the burden, both in protecting the public health and in reopening our economy, ultimately is going to fall to state and local officials more than it will to the federal government. The federal government continues to get the majority of the attention, I think, predominantly because of its daily press briefings and the work that it's doing clinically, both in treatments and in vaccines, and in the backup work they've done in supplying ventilators and other important medical equipment and the travel ban. But ultimately, these are now state and local decisions and are going to have to be made on state and local conditions. So there is no universal state of the coronavirus right now. It's an issue of 50 different situations in 50 different states.
And I think people are losing sight of that because they're seeing America as one, but you're right, there are 50 units within that. And each one is a different area geographically, and there are considerations involved. Listen, I wanted to ask you about those press briefings. You see that in the last couple of days, the president has started to cut those back a little bit. They didn't ask questions. They made it a shorter program because sometimes they've dragged on for hours. And the president has come under criticism in this past week for things that he put out there that he said were just a kind of funny, sarcastic way. Of course, the media, you give them an inch and they run with the story. You think it's a good idea to cut these press briefings down at this point? And should they be doing that? Because he's been really out front of this thing.
I think they've become helpful for a large number of Americans. The ratings on them have been huge, probably for a whole bunch of reasons. But one of the most constructive being that, you know, the American people are, in fact, looking for guidance about what is being done on the federal level and what's being done on the state level and what the, you know, specific latest information is on treatments and on the public health status and on the vaccine. So I think they've been beneficial. And I also think, you know, that's the public health dimension of it. The political dimension of it is that this has been sort of reflected in a lot of polling is that the American people have seen firsthand how unfairly the president's been treated in many of these briefings. And the fact that the real objects of concern and questioning should be, you know, you would think at this point, the World Health Organization and the government of China have sort of escaped scrutiny. And the president's been very proactive and assertive in this. And I think the American people see it and have had, you know, kind of a reaction to it, especially for those who may not be following public policy or politics on any, you know, given daily basis.
Yeah, so that's interesting. So you're saying the exposure on all of this in the long run is going to be a good thing. You know, there's a something behind this I want to tell you about here. When the president started these press briefings, I had the sense that the left didn't think he was going to be out in front of this in the way that he has. In other words, I think that they were all caught flat-footed, and they were surprised, a lot of the media outlets, and certainly the Democrat Party was, because the president has really been out in front of this, leading by example with the daily conferences, as you just said, the daily information, and really trying to encourage the American people. That's got to be a good thing, yeah?
Yeah, I mean, his approach has been so comprehensive and so proactive, and you start with the January 31 decision that he made to close off travel from China, which was broadly and widely ridiculed. I mean, the media criticized it. Every Democrat that I'm aware of, I can't think of one exception, criticized it. Joe Biden labeled it xenophobic and racist. The government of China called it an unfriendly measure. The World Health Organization criticized it. And yet, when you look at the steps that have been taken to date, because part of the concern here and part of the anxiety related to it is there's no single bullet here except to stop the bleeding, which was the travel restriction, stop people from entering the country who have had exposure to this. So that was the singular most constructive thing. And he was almost alone in holding that position. And I think he deserves immense praise. I've labeled it one of the boldest, most important and effective public policy decisions made by a president in our lifetimes.
Yeah. There's another story we're going to have to dive more into during the week, but did you see that meeting they had internationally with the World Health Organization, a lot of the European countries and others? And of course, we were not there because President Trump is obviously, we've had that situation with the World Health Organization, calling them out and defunding them temporarily, at least. What becomes of all that, you think?
Well, we have an investigation that's underway within the federal government that I think is going to be very exhaustive. So I don't think there's going to be any secrets as it relates to what the World Health Organization did and didn't do. They clearly parroted China's line that there was no human-to-human transmission as recently as mid-January, which was completely misguided, wrong, and one of the greatest public disservices that could have been offered to the people of the world, who at that point could have begun taking protective and other proactive steps to protect the people of their respective countries. It was entirely misleading. It was beneficial to China. And whether they did that because they simply took China at its word, which would be a problem in and of itself, or whether they were actually conspiring with China to mislead the world, they did not fulfill their primary responsibility, which is to provide accurate, up-to-date, relevant information related to the public health needs of the people of this planet. So the president's correct to suspend the aid to the World Health Organization, even though, frankly, we're the largest donor and we don't give all that much. It's predominantly been privately funded, which is another issue of possible conflicts and whatnot. I think our whole involvement in that needs to be reevaluated. I don't dispute the fact that we have global public health needs and an organization would be useful. But if we can't get it done through them accurately, it's, you know, a disservice to continue. And we should do almost what we've done in the United Nations Human Rights Council, withdraw and find other avenues to advance those goals.
You know, a lot of these global organizations need to be reevaluated. And I think most Americans would agree with the president because they're well overdue. And it's a time, the time has come here to do exactly that. All right. So listen, I'm a bit surprised at the patience of the American people at this point. And I think the patience is running out. I want to get your opinion on that. But you're seeing there's a lot of anti-lockdown protests going on from sea to shining sea. I mean, you're seeing it a couple of the heavy states, Wisconsin, they're ramping up a lot of protests, but Michigan has been a hot spot, if you will, for these protests. And that's because of the draconian measures that Governor Whitmer has instituted with the emergency powers. The Michigan Senate just passed two bills on Friday that would limit Governor Gretchen Whitmer's emergency powers. And the governor came back and said she's going to fight this thing. But they said there, the legislator said, to allow a governor nearly unlimited power without deadline is not good, no matter who is in charge. And they're trying to pull back some of those powers that she's got because she really has crossed the line, a lot of people think, with some of the steps they've taken. Has the power gone to a lot of these people's heads? And what do you think about the protests here?
Yeah, I think that's indisputable that, you know, you've had a handful of governors, and she's probably the most prominent example, who have in fact overreacted in ways that violate civil rights and liberties of their citizens. And whether that's challenged, you know, at the ballot box, whether it's challenged in the streets with protests, or whether it's challenged in the courts, or all of the above, it needs to be challenged. These decisions need to be databased, they need to be justified. And whether or not justified by legitimate public health needs, they need to be rolled back, because I think we're in a position right now where there's no singular statement. You cannot say emphatically, we need to continue a national lockdown because this public health threat is that great. You cannot say that we need to completely reopen this economy because there's no public health threat. We have a legitimate national public health threat that varies from state to state. Those conditions on the reopening of the economy, which I think there's things that can be done right now, things that can be done a week from now, things that can be done a month from now, needs to be a calculated, studied, incremental process of reopening this economy and beginning the recovery process from this. The reality on a polling basis is that the American people have a slightly higher opinion of President Trump's management of the coronavirus pandemic than they do of his overall performance. That to me suggests that there's a certain body of the electorate out there who are not Trump supporters before, who feel very confident and pleased in his management of this crisis. And I think that's probably encouraging for his reelection.
Yeah, that's a valid point, because what we call that is leadership, right? I mean, that's leadership pure and simple. And the fact that the president has shown that leadership, that I think people can embrace. You know, one of the big conversations, Leslie, we're going to have just ahead here, Michael, is going to be not just the economy, but the deficit and paying for all of these dollars now that have happened, you know, unexpectedly in many cases here. But you see the CBO projected, almost a 40% quarterly GDP drop. I mean, I'm not surprised. And a $3.7 trillion deficit just with this thing. I think those numbers sound pretty real to me. What do you think?
Yeah, I mean, I think it's time that we have a national discussion and an education to the American people about what debt and deficit really are on a federal level, because they're very different on a federal level than they are on a state level. And there's a lot of people, particularly on the left, who I think are, you know, quick to point out, aha, Tea Party movement was all about the debt and deficit, and now you guys have nothing to say about what's going on the federal level because you support Trump. And the reality is, our concerns about the Obama administration's measures, where he was not growing the economy, for starters. He had GDP that was, you know, in the 1% area, and never went over 3% in the entire 8 years. So debt and deficit as a percentage of GDP was low. And the fact that the programs themselves were so illogical, politicized, and in many cases wasteful. We don't need necessarily to balance a budget. I think that's on a federal level. We do on a state level, because the state does not have fiat currency powers like the federal government does. States do not have a Federal Reserve. States do not, they can issue municipal bonds. They don't have the vast flexibility that Treasury bonds do. And those all need to be taken into consideration. So the real metrics ultimately on how is the economy going are employment, wage growth, and inflation, you know, and debt and deficits become a problem when you have inflationary pressures. That's really the key metric.
And then what's really interesting about all this, you all might have seen there, Mitch McConnell, the Senate Majority Leader, came out and talked about, you know, made the comment about, well, if states need to go bankrupt, that's what they'll have to do. And of course, you heard some of the kickback from the blue state governors had a lot to say about that. It was interesting. We'll cover that just a little bit later here. A big thank you to Michael Johns to open up the program here. Today, friends, we're really talking about the conflict that is happening between red and blue states to reopen America here. I want to talk to you about the medical component next year, and I'd like to bring on Dr. Elizabeth Lee Vliet joins us. She's an independent physician specializing in preventive and climacteric medicine. She has offices in Arizona and Texas, and always happy to have her. And I want to start here, Dr. Vliet, and the president had made a remark to reporters, and the report, of course, when you do that with the media, they took it and run and made a story out of it. Clearly, I think in some cases, I will qualify up front with you, Dr. Vliet. I think people have gotten bored a little bit, and I think they're entertaining themselves. Well, the New York Times came out and said Trump's remarks prompt warnings on disinfectants. And the fact that the president made that comment out there, and people took it and ran and said they were actually talking about putting this into the human body. It's kind of a weird story, isn't it?
I think most people listening to the press briefings and people listening to your show have so much more common sense than the media. they are just showing how incredibly stupid they are. And not only that, the fact that they've really shown their hand in dramatic ways, that they use every single opportunity to try and attack and discredit the president. And in fact, they are discrediting and dismissing and belittling the American public. They act like we're all stupid, doctors and patients. And the fact is that when they are focused on such inane trivia and such ridiculous comments, they actually are minimizing the things that the public cares deeply about. People are losing their lives. They're losing their livelihoods. Many are threatened with loss of homes. They don't have food to eat. People have no money coming in. Yeah. Those are the things that they care about. And for the press to be constantly playing these ridiculous games.
People really have press and life and death situations to make now with their families, their livelihoods. Their entire worlds have crashed here in the past couple of months, and everybody is in that canoe together, basically. Here's the thing I want to dive into with you here now. The coronavirus death toll has gone well over 50,000 now in the United States here. And so there's a couple of things I want to discuss with that. First of all, the initial models were showing well over a couple of million. There were even reports that were well higher than that. So first question, were the models wrong?
Well, I think the models were clearly flawed, and the people who developed them initially came out and said, well, we had the wrong assumptions. And there was a lot of criticism about the specific variables that went into creating the model. Mm-hmm. You know, we've had an old saying about computers, garbage in, garbage out.
That's right.
And that's part of the problem. The other part of the problem clearly was the fact that the Chinese Communist Party leadership withheld critical information from the world. Mm-hmm. So it's not totally the fault of the modelers that they had garbage in, because the Chinese Communist Party leadership were lying to their own people and to the world and to the World Health Organization, which in turn then colluded with the Chinese Communist Party to disseminate false information.
Up to 50% of the people, I understand, and I want you to tell me what you know on this, but with COVID-19 are unaware they have the virus. So they are asymptomatic with this COVID-19. Here's the argument that's being put out right now, Dr. Vliet, and it's this. It's the argument of testing before reopening. And it's kind of a blue state, red state argument right now, because the blue states want massive testing to be done before anybody moves a square inch or does anything. In the meantime, economically and with livelihoods, as you mentioned a moment ago, people are suffering badly. Let me give you an example here. Democrats like State Senator Lori Berman of Florida, and there's a lot of these politicians on record saying things like this, says that the curve is flattening and we can start lifting restrictions is like saying the parachute has slowed our rate of descent and now we can take it off. But, you know, there are a lot of people who have that feeling, just like this State Senator Lori Berman put out there. They have that same feeling that we should, until not one life is at risk, we should all stay locked in our rooms. It doesn't seem like a reasonable argument to have.
Well, of course it isn't. How many people die in automobile accidents every single year? Do we keep people locked in their home because somebody died in a car accident and therefore everybody has to have 100% perfect safety for their automobiles and their driving ability before we let them out on the road? Mm-hmm. Of course not. Life has risk. And common sense, listeners, public, people know that. We take a risk every day. We get out on the highway and we drive to work. So the idea that you can test 330 million people before you open up this country is absolutely ludicrous. And it goes to the very point of when you let government and politicians make medical decisions, you lose your life and your livelihood. It is abhorrent that we have politicians stepping in, governors making decisions, restricting medication, and changing the rules for the FDA allowed use of off-label prescribing. When we have a pandemic, we cannot have politicians micromanaging every single daily decision of our lives. I think the most egregious example is this lunatic dictator in Michigan who is telling people they can't even mow their lawns. For heaven's sakes, we've known since the tuberculosis epidemic years ago that being outside in the sunshine and getting vitamin D and sunshine and fresh air helps people recover. It's absolutely, the Democrats and this type of comment is just showing people exactly what it's like to live under socialism and tyrannical control of your every move in life.
Well, it clearly is an awakening. For some people, it's a rude awakening, but it clearly is awakening for everybody to see this. Now, one of the big things I want to talk to Dr. Vliet about in moments here is the hydroxychloroquine and some interesting developments on that program and some other stories in just a moment here, too. But as we continue on with this battle of red versus blue states, the mentality that seems to be shaping up out there. Listen, an interesting soundbite I want to play from you from one of your favorite politicians. Well, anyways, just listen to this quick.
When we talk about this idea of reopening society, you know, only in America does the president, when the president tweets about liberation, does he mean go back to work? When we, you know, have this discussion about going back or reopening, I think a lot of people should just say, no, we're not going back to that. We're not going back to working 70-hour weeks just so that we could put food on the table and not even feel any sort of semblance of security in our lives.
So I just thought that was just a perfectly displayed quote, political quote, that I would let you opine on. And let me do that here. Let me bring on Dennis Santiago. And Dennis is an American strategist focusing on strategic warfare, asymmetric warfare, arms control, global stability. Dennis, you just hear that with AOC. I could not resist playing that quote. I thought it would be highly entertaining for everybody this morning. And what do you say, sir?
The fact of the matter is that the American economy runs on work, and you can't actually change that. It's very clear that there's still people in this country that are living on whimsy, basically pursuing things that cannot be in their heads because they're bored. This is not a time to be bored. This is a time to be planning about what we're going to do to get everybody back on board the train. Mm-hmm. And it's not helpful.
But there are people who really believe her. And a lot of this gets back to the fact that the country has really embraced people like the AOC and the squad and those new people in Congress as a new form of socialism in America. And now you see with that kind of a quote, they really don't think work is essential to our well-being. Now, everybody at this point thinks the federal government has an endless supply of money, keep in mind, okay? And obviously, we're going to learn soon enough, as I said to you, that that is not the case. And there is a price to pay for all of this that nobody is talking about. So what happened is, he said, I would certainly be in favor of allowing states to use the bankruptcy route, is what McConnell said, Dennis. He said, it's saved some cities, and there's no reason for it not to be available. The important issue of what states have done. Many of them have done to themselves with their own pension programs and their spending. That's not going to be any desire on the Republican side to bail out state pensions by borrowing money from future generations. Now, there's a lot to that. There's a lot of pack. Now, Cuomo came out in New York and said one of the really dumb ideas of all time. Cuomo wants him to solve his problems. So here's the question and the theory here. A lot of people are afraid that some of these states that have been a little reckless in the past with their spending, that they're going to try to push this all into the pandemic and use this kind of as an out for themselves. I mean, New Jersey Governor Phil Murphy is on the record saying he was stunned by the comments and called it completely and utterly irresponsible. New York Mayor Bill de Blasio, same kind of talk. He went on and even elaborated more. He said McConnell wants police officers to lose their jobs and firefighters to go broke. My point is, all of this conversation is reckless for public consumption. It is misleading at best. It's straight out lies, to be quite frank with you. What do you take of all this?
Remember, you know, I once wrote an article about in order to save America's cities, we have to let them fail.
That's right.
Well, this is an example of that situation coming into real life. We have the states and some of the major cities basically now in a situation of they are counting on the federal government bailing them out, you know, kind of the same way we did the banking system back in 2008. The word that is coming to them is that, no, you're not going to get bailed out because that's not the way the country works. They're in denial of it. They want to basically change the political situation so that states essentially get the same living wage adjustment and quality of life demand that, you know, in the last thing that you played with AOC, she's basically calling for living wage for everybody as well. We don't have a self-sustaining economy that can provide that kind of social safety net, you know, which is socialism, for everyone or for every state or for every county or for every city. And the bottom line is the way this works in the real world is some places will fail and some places will go into not very nice outcomes when they can't pay for their public services, when their ability to tax starts to get stopped because there isn't any more to tax. It's not a time to just basically say, you know, we'll spend everything. We're already doing that already, right? I mean, you know, we're putting temporary bailouts on everything, and, you know, that's going to have to be paid back. And there are also crashes coming to the financial system that are going to have to be paid back. The mortgage system is going to crash when all these balloon payments that have to be paid by people that are deferring and forbearing on their loans come due in 3 months. Yeah. That's enough of a stress to the system that has nothing to do with, you know, any cities and states want to get bailed out even on top of that. We don't have the money for that.
Let me bring on here next year, Jim McKay. And, you know, Jim is a voice here. He's a political analyst, commentator, radio producer here, a 30-year background in global technology, pharmaceuticals. Jim, so China has been obviously a center part of this story of the coronavirus and coming out of Wuhan, and that the conversation of the market versus the lab there in Wuhan. Well, the National Republican Senatorial Committee has sent a memo around, if you will. It's a pretty large memo, actually, 57-page memo, and it was authored by top Republican strategists advising GOP candidates to address the coronavirus crisis by aggressively attacking China. And of course, all the political parties have this. I mean, they circulate memos within to keep everybody on the same page. It makes sense, especially in an election year. And so they say that they want everybody to attack China accordingly because they are guilty as charged. It stresses three main lines of assault here, that China caused the virus by covering it up. And I don't think anybody could argue that point, that the Democrats are soft on China. Well, it's another point you're probably hard to argue on. And that the Republicans will push for sanctions on China for its role in spreading the pandemic. Interesting. What do you think about this memo and using, and really just pushing the truth out there, I think, is what I think needs to be a rude awakening for everybody.
Well, as we all know, the truth hurts, especially when it comes out of a politician's mouth. I think China and the world, in a sense, is behind this. It's not just China. There's something like 50 or 60 different laboratories around the world fooling around with these viruses. They have currently the NIH says there's 1,200 different strains of virus they're playing with. It's Russian roulette with a loaded revolver is what they're doing.
Jim, I've been thinking about what you just said. That's a great thing to bring up. I was going to ask Dr. Vliet about that as well. In fact, let me bring her into the conversation right now, both you and Dr. Vliet, and talk about what you say there. Because there are, it does not get lost on me. And Jim, have you talk about this first. But the viruses that are, I mean, wow. As you start to read into this thing and understand, and I want people to understand, there are a lot of bad viruses and diseases out there that are in these laboratories. Now, Jim, you study this stuff all the time. Any one of these get out, and we got more than a pandemic going on. I mean, this could be the new future, what we're dealing with now, no?
Yes, this virus, you know, they say it occurred in bats, where the bats were 25 miles away from this laboratory, and there were none of them ever sold in that seafood market to begin with. Right. That we know for fact. So when they say this is not an engineered virus, you don't get splicing of different viruses together in a natural environment. It doesn't happen that way. And they've been doing this for years, playing with this. Now, if you're doing it to try to come up with vaccines against naturally occurring diseases is one thing, but creating Frankenstein type of monsters in the laboratory is going to come back and get you. And that's exactly what's happened here.
Now, this is a hell of a point you bring up. Dr. Vliet, comment on there what Jim McKay puts out there, because I've been doing a lot of reading and study on this topic of what he says there. And the Frankenstein is kind of an interesting word to use here. What do you say about that?
Well, I think that's a good description when we start tinkering with nature and we start increasing the gain of function research that's been going on in many different countries. When we talk about gain of function, we're talking about making a virus more virulent or changing its characteristics in a way to cause more damage or to change it sometimes in other ways that could possibly be beneficial but often isn't. And I think that people don't understand that there's no guarantee that when you are working with such organisms that you may not unleash something accidentally that you didn't intend to. Now, we can speculate about how it evolved in China and how it got out.
And we have.
The bottom line is it whether it was engineered, whether it was a natural virus that they were doing this chimeric or gain of function research isn't the point. The point is that there was it escaped the laboratory deliberately or accidentally. The consequence is the same. People were dying. China lied, did not inform the world as the responsible players in the international community would have done, and they perpetuated problem causing damage to 184 countries around the world.
The entire world, really.
That benefited China by the fact that it leveled the playing field. Their economy was hurting under the policies of President Trump.
That's a great point.
Up to them.
Yeah. It's been 100 years since we've had a pandemic of any sorts, back to 1917, 1819, and what the world struggled through there before our lifetimes now, mind you. I'm wondering, I mean, take a shot at this for me. We've just gone through a life-shattering episode here, a nightmare of proportions nobody could have predicted. Is this the exception to the rule? Or, Dr. Vliet, in your opinion, could this become the new normal?
Well, I think we better pray to God that it doesn't become the new normal. Part of the problem, go back to the basics. How do you spread disease? Infected people travel and move. I've been writing about the diseases coming across the southern border with Mexico since we've known about the increase in disease since at least 2014 and probably earlier than that. And those are other diseases that we had pretty much eradicated. Tuberculosis is a great example of what was pouring into this country with unscreened immigrants coming across the border illegally. And I said at the time, essentially, by flooding our southern border with people who have not been screened, not vaccinated, we don't know what they're carrying. Basically, they were using human carriers as with biological weapons. Whether you engineer the weapon or whether it's tuberculosis that occurs in countries around the world, the end result is if you bring in a large number of people with that disease and spread it in a community where it hasn't been or it was eradicated, it's essentially biological warfare. And that's what China did in allowing, what was the figure, over 5 million of their citizens were flying around the world after they already knew they had the outbreak. That was deliberate. China locked down its own domestic travel and did not shut down international travel.
I want everybody to take in what Dr. Vliet just said. Just stop what you're doing and listen to what was just said, because this is a point that is so significant that I don't think people out there are really grasping, Dr. Vliet. And Jim, I want to get you to opine on this as well, but listen to what we just said. They shut down their own country, isolated their whole province, their Hubei province, and did all of that, and led, as you just stated, Dr., how many millions and millions of people fly all over the world. I mean, how does that happen, Jim?
That doesn't happen by accident. I have always been of the opinion that this virus, once it either accidentally was created or escaped from the lab, mm-hmm. China saw an opportunity to strike back economically against the United States and eventually the entire world by doing just what the doctor said. They let it out. They knew they could contain it within the Wuhan area because it's a rather isolated part of China. And they also have draconian procedures to do that, which they exercised. But once it got out of the genie was out of the bottle, they decided to let it roll around the world. Something like 300,000 Chinese people traveled in and out of the New York metropolitan area in the month of January and into early February before it was shut down from Europe.
Exactly right on that point medically. And Italy was hit especially hard because Northern Italy has over 500,000 Chinese immigrants living and working in the leather factories, and they were flying back and forth to China for the Chinese New Year, and the Italian country was decimated by China knowingly letting their citizens travel back and forth. Their direct flights from Milan to Wuhan, China, every day.
Right, right. Well, I tell you, I mean, really, everybody should really take this to heart and understand what we're speaking about, because there are so many ramifications of what China did here. Dennis, let me bring you back into what China has done here. And I think that, you know, when I talk about reshuffling the cards here on the world order powers, I mean, nobody should lose sight of what China was up to here. And I mean, somehow this has got to make everybody aware of what their intent is.
I think what really you see here is that the Chinese never saw the rest of the world as human beings. So they're very insular, and they protected their own, but didn't really care what happened to everyone else. And look at the ramifications of that kind of view of the world and what it's done. You know, 184 countries have had to react because these guys didn't think that the rest of us mattered.
With all this going on, Dennis, I mean, we cannot lose sight, and nor do I ever. We're in an election year here, very clearly. It's a weird election year. It doesn't quite feel like it, that the presidential election is, what, months away now. Joe Biden, the presumptive Democrat nominee, I guess, if that's what ends up being here. So he had a fundraiser here just a couple of nights ago at the end of the week, and he said, mark my words, Biden says this now, I think Trump is going to kick back the election somehow, come up with some rationale why it can't be held. Imagine threatening not to fund the post office, Biden goes on to say. Now, what in God's name is that all about, other than trying to let the word out that he's going to do all he can to make it very hard for people to vote? That's the only way he thinks he can possibly win. And this is all about the mail-in vote and the absentee ballots, which Pelosi was trying to push through the House. That got side-railed. You see what's going on here?
Oh, yeah, definitely. I mean, what's really going on there is Biden is doing everything that he can to get some attention right now. Mm-hmm. And he's also doing everything that he can. The Democrats have a very clear calculus on this election. They need to be able to shift over to get mail-in votes to work in their favor, because the battle lines are pretty drawn. At this point in time, you know, people's minds are kind of made up on how they want to vote, because the whole process of deliberation, there hasn't been any. And so Biden, he's just trying to stay in the news. I mean, you know, he wants to be in a news cycle because that's what you need to do. I'm actually watching the fight for who gets to be vice president. I mean, you know, you got Cuomo and Whitmer acting like Mr. and Mrs. Howell fighting over marinas. And, you know, because they both want the job, and they're all crazy, right? You know, so at this point, basically not that different from AOC.
Yeah. Well, the policies all kind of line up there. Now, I hear you loud and clear, and that's well said, but a lot of policies line up on that far left edge. You're right. You know, I've got some interesting correspondence in here at the network from people and from both experts and from others who have are taking their guess at who will be that VP candidate, if you will, for the ticket, because they really believe that is going to be the person they're trying to push out there. There are others who believe they're waiting until 2024 to try to rally the troops here. It's going to be very interesting to see how this all plays out in regards to Biden, the VP pick.
The betting is Biden's going to die, and whoever is the VP is going to be the president. Yeah. So, yeah. And that's the calculus that people are watching. And, you know, you got the far left basically saying it's got to be a woman of color, you know. And
listen, I heard Democrats say the other day that they don't think Joe Biden has dementia. They just think he needs glasses to read, if you can believe that. But that was really said to me, you know. Oh, yeah, yeah. I mean, that is funny. I mean, if he need, you know, I mean, that he needs glasses to read. Wow. I mean, oh, boy. Well, I could take that one in all kinds of places, people. But I'm going to leave it right there, okay? And now let's. I want to talk next here with Dr. Vliet about this hydroxychloroquine. And this is interesting here. The FDA has issued a warning on both on chloroquine and the hydroxychloroquine after deaths and poisonings are reported. And when I seen this, I thought of you immediately, Dr. Vliet, this story. So it's the FDA. This just came out Friday against taking the malaria drugs, et cetera, to treat COVID-19 outside of a hospital or formal clinical trial. Now, a lot of this information, I think, is being taken totally out of context, but let me you speak about that, please.
It absolutely is being taken out of context. The FDA ruled in 1955 that hydroxychloroquine was a safe medication. World Health Organization listed as one of its essential medications used around the world for billions of patients over the last 65 years. So the FDA has already ruled that it's safe, and they've allowed it to stay on the market for treating lupus, rheumatoid arthritis, and malaria. So to come out now and warn doctors that it is something we should not use our judgment to prescribe in the outpatient setting is actually dangerous, and it flies in the face of the entire FDA track record on this medication. It's prescribed for millions of Americans with lupus and rheumatoid in the outpatient setting, not in hospitals, not on clinical trials. And by waiting until late in the disease of COVID-19, when patients are in the hospital, you absolutely are essentially ensuring that hydroxychloroquine is prescribed too late so that it's not effective. Mm-hmm. And that's how some of the studies have been set up by our own NIH. They are doing them in the hospital, late stage. They're not giving zinc, which is critical for it to work. And we are seeing an orchestrated, systematic, massive attack on the physician-patient relationship, the trust that people need to have in their doctors, on turning pharmacists against doctors, insisting that state governors and medical boards are asking pharmacists to turn in doctors who prescribe it. This is absolutely a totalitarian police state in medicine that is very ominous. And people need to understand this is what the Soviet Union did. This is what I was there in 1974 and 1975. I experienced the oppression in the Soviet Union and Eastern Europe behind the Iron Curtain. This is what socialized medicine is all about, when the government tells you what you can take, what doctors can prescribe, and they shape the narrative. If we look at the numbers, more than 90% of the people who are in hospital and on ventilators and then die are people who have diabetes, hypertension, kidney disease.
You look at New York, who's had the most deaths, and you look at Governor Cuomo, who has, as you've stated before to me directly on the program, has had the most crazy laws, the most draconian program as far as using this drug.
He prohibited, he had the most restrictive emergency order in the country. Wow. He restricted hydroxychloroquine to hospitalized patients on a clinical trial, and many hospitals can't ramp up a clinical trial that quickly. number one. And number two, they were late stage disease. And in addition to that, we have the whole nursing home debacle with Cuomo's decision to readmit people to the nursing homes when they knew they were exposed. The nursing home patients are the most vulnerable of all.
That's right.
And
That's
then
right.
he refused to let the doctors prescribe hydroxychloroquine to help protect them.
Well, Dr. Vliet, if he did that, I mean, and I know you may not want to comment on this, and that's fine, but isn't he really, I mean, responsible for some of these deaths up there?
Well, I've said it. I think he does have blood on his hands, and I think these decisions were political decisions, and they cost lives, and they cost people's livelihoods and jobs. Those decisions went the opposite of what India and Brazil did to control their infections and keep their country from having such a massive lockdown.
There's another story I have to ask you about, and I also want to get Jim to give me a quick opinion on this, please, both of you. And that is this, and I found this very interesting, that an alarming number of Americans believe a coronavirus vaccine exists and is being withheld. Nearly a third of Americans believe that it is either probably or definitely true that this vaccine exists and it's being withheld. And this is a study that was put out by the Democracy Fund and the UCLA Nationscape Project in partnership with USA Today that to see about a third of the people give that some level of truth. People have a distrust out there, clearly. And there's something interesting about this because they believe there's another, alternative means that they want to do something else. What do you think about this, Dr. Vliet?
Well, I think the media has created such distrust that it's not surprising. The media has lied about so many actual facts that people can check themselves online these days that they have created an environment of distrust. In addition, the fact that people can read about doctors safely using hydroxychloroquine and then they hear statements from the FDA does create an environment of distrust. And that's what I was talking about when I said they are setting up a situation where patients are being forced to choose, do I believe my doctor or do I believe the government? And I can tell you who I think is beginning to lose that battle.
If people
think that the government's hiding a vaccine, that shows you that they don't have much trust in what they're getting from the government, which is why you don't want the government making your medical decisions.
Jim, I want your last word on this vaccine.
First of all, there's no vaccine. And the reason there's no vaccine is when they develop this COVID-19 combination, they took the SARS virus and they spliced HIV-1 as an attachment to it. We have no vaccine after 20-some-odd years for HIV. We have different mitigations, therapies, and stuff. There's no vaccine. That makes this a very, very difficult problem to solve. And it's despicable in many ways that they made that choice of taking the HIV virus and combining it with this respiratory infection.
I mean, as you can all hear, there is so much more to the story. Isn't that always the truth, people? I mean, you know, there's what their truth, our truth, and what really is the truth, maybe. I mean, there's always so much more to the story. So what I'd like to do next here in the last moments we have on the program here is talk to you about our vanishing freedoms, the fight for liberty. More Viewpoint in just a moment. AmericaOutloud.com is the voice of liberty and justice for all. Well, as we celebrate our 4-year anniversary, thank you for making it all possible. We are a grassroots movement of patriots, blogs, podcasts, video, and 24/7 talk radio on our free apps on Apple, Android, or Alexa. We are the vision of the voices, America Out Loud Talk Radio.
Think back to the last time you felt healthy and energized. The best times of our lives occur when we're at the peak of our health. Sleeping better, full of energy and focus. We know that fades with age, and you might be feeling the effects of aging as low energy and poor sleep. But it doesn't have to be that way. there haven't been any nutrition systems designed to rejuvenate our bodies as we get older until now. Healthy Cell Pro is the only multi-nutrient system that impacts the building block of your body, the cell. Created by anti-aging expert and Nobel Prize nominee, Dr. Vincent Giampapa, award-winning Healthy Cell Pro cuts through the complexity of nutrition supplements by simply giving you the purest ingredients, filling dietary gaps to nourish your cells and enhance your quality of life for optimal performance. Visit HealthyCell.com and use code OUTLOUD for an exclusive discount or call 844-869-9958.
The America Out Loud Talk Radio app is on Android or Apple. It's the perfect way to listen in to the new generation of talk shows and hosts who are ready to inform and inspire.
Well, you see that Attorney General William Barr says that the states should not go too far in these stay-at-home orders and that there are threats already of legal action here. Big story, big conversation, people here. And let's do that next here with Del Wilbers here. Del is a former CIA and Department of Defense intelligence and counterterrorism officer. Joining us well in this segment is Ava Armstrong. She's a political commentator, radio personality, a best-selling author here at America Out Loud. Okay, so this was interesting. The Attorney General caught everybody by surprise, by the way, with this interview earlier in the week. He characterized some of the state's stay-at-home restrictions with this pandemic here as disturbingly close to house arrest, wow, and said the Justice Department will consider legal action if governors start to take restrictions on movement and civil liberties too far. Now, Del, here's what I would start the conversation with is this. When he says if governors start to, I think many of them already have possibly done this and have gone too far with civil liberties from some of the stories I've seen from Michigan, Wisconsin, the Carolinas, and so many other states. What do you think about this? Have they gone too far already?
Oh, I think so. I think they've already crossed the threshold of infringing on our constitutional rights. And I would mention, as an example, historically back during World War II, when we were attacked by at Pearl Harbor by the Japanese, we were at war with another country, yet our personal freedoms and our movements and that were not impacted nearly to the extent that they are in this current situation, excluding obviously the Japanese American citizens who had eventually were placed in internment camps. But you know, for the majority of the country, now we were free to move about and do what we chose, even though we were a nation at war with another country.
I mean, that kind of puts it in perspective right there, Ava. And even after 9/11, I mean, we didn't see this sort of a I'm talking about on personal civil liberties now. I mean, clearly there were some adjustments happening, but nothing to the magnitude of what we see. Have you ever seen anything like this?
I'm outraged. As you know, I'm a constitutional conservative. I don't call myself a Republican, and there's a reason for that. There are Republicans that just don't pay any attention to the Constitution. This is what our whole country is based upon, is freedom, liberty. We are right now locked down and treated as slaves would be. And I just can't believe it. And it's all because the Democrats want us to have the new Green Deal or whatever they call it. And it's ridiculous. So the Democrats right now are cheering. They want to keep the country shut down, and they want you to get $2,000 a month, and they don't want you to go back to work. They want you to protest going back to work. So we have two Americas right now. We have two.
You know, that's a great, I'm so glad you say the way you say it, Ava, because the theme here throughout the show has been red state, blue state. It reminds me of Dr. Seuss. Remember blue fish, red fish, you know? That's yes. Kind of what we're dealing here, I guess, with red state. I mean, there are two schools of thinking, as you say, and there's a lot of undercurrent from all of that that is fascinating for people to really understand what the metrics are here. Here's the thing. What about the fact, Ava, that they say they're doing this for your own safety and security, so shut up and just deal with it?
Well, what I would say to that is the legitimacy of government is dependent on the consent of the governed. See, we're different than any other country. We don't sit around and decide, well, you know, this is a good idea and we're just going to force it on the minions. That's not how it works. The people are the source of power in this country.
Wow.
And we cannot forget this.
Wow. Well, I got to tell you what, Dell, that is a remarkable point that Ava makes there, and it's to this here. You know, she's right when she says most around the world, most countries, it's the government that controls the people. And that's almost pretty consistent with a lot of things. But yet here, it's we have to always constantly remind people that the government works for us. I mean, I do that all the time on the platform, but people forget that the government works for us. And I think they have it backwards, don't they?
Absolutely. I mean, through the course of my career, I've lived in quite a few foreign countries and under different types of governments. I spent a large amount of time in West Berlin when it was still a divided city, surrounded by communist East Germany. You know, I lived in Arab countries, and so I've seen, you know, the types of governments and systems and that they have in place. You know, and believe me, you know what we have is the best by far. The one thing that I have noted recently as a result of this crisis is, and just recently, Governor Newsom out in California made a comment, and I paraphrase, but that this is an opportunity for us to become more progressive. And I think New York Governor Cuomo has said something similar, as well as others. So that is exactly what is going on here, is they are trying to complete Barack Obama's fundamental transformation of the United States.
You know, you talk about that transformation, because that really was the whole marquee of the Obama, the hope and change and the transformation of America, which fell short, and especially when Trump rode in, that changed the whole paradigm, clearly. And now we're dealing with all of this, but kind of, you know, if you think about it, Ava, even wasn't it in the Democrat Party, wasn't it Clyburn that came out and said they were going to use this to reorganize the operatives here in the party, something out of... He said to that degree?
Oh, they can't let a crisis go to waste. So yes, we are going to be forced into subservience here. We have to really, this has to be taken as a wake-up call. All I can do, I look at things like Thomas Jefferson and the things that he said. And one of the quotes that he had that I love so much, it's so pertinent right now. Mm-hmm. I prefer the tumult of liberty to the quiet of servitude. And you think about that for a moment. People are panic buying in the stores. Why aren't we prepping? Why aren't we preparing ahead of time for these types of things? Americans have to take this into their own hands and do the right thing. They have to stand strong in the face of government doing this dominant move.
You hear the comments here of Ava Armstrong, Del Wilbur, and I mean, makes me think. Remarkable thoughts, folks. All right, so listen, let me set this up for you all, because we are flush out of time here. An hour is not enough for Viewpoint this Sunday. Clearly, we could double and triple this here, but here's what I want to suggest to you all. Tune in Monday on The Voice of a Nation, my weekly show, to hear this conversation in a bigger way. We'll have another guest on with us, and we will talk about the civil liberties in a very thought-provoking discussion. That's on Monday, 6 p.m. Eastern Time, 3 p.m. Pacific, on The Voice of a Nation. We always look forward to having you there, friends. What a show, what a program. And the main thing is we need to get this message out there. This is America Out Loud, as you all know, is a grassroots movement of we the people that take back the power, as we just said, actually, in this segment, very clearly, that the power rests with we the people. It does not rest with the operatives and the political elites who think that they own and run it all, people. And so that's what this is. We invite you always back to AmericaOutLoud.com. We're friends. It is a firestorm of conversation and things that are happening right there. Thank you again, as always, for being with me and being part of the journey here today. It's time to get involved and get loud.